on the March, brought to you by Bubble Genius. 100 years ago, in the icy waters of the North Atlantic, one of history's most captivating catastrophes, the sinking of the unsinkable RMS Titanic. Yes, 100 years later, its tragic story still captures hearts and minds everywhere.
And now you can have your own piece of history right in your own bathtub with The Band Bathed On, Sudsy Bath Bar from Bubble Genius. This clever creation is crafted from genuine vegetable glycerin soap and features a three-dimensional rendering of the sinking majesty, complete with swirling icy waters and frosty icebergs. Not to mention a historically accurate rendition of the very icy culprit that tore into the Titanic and sent it to the freezing depths below, while women and children fled and the band bathed on. Go down with the Titanic in your tub with the band bathed on, only from Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com!
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
What is a nut? Jokes?
A nut joke is when we're trying to make fun of something, and what we do is we make a statement that we pretend is true, but at the end we say, not, which means it's not true.
So teach me how to make one.
All right. What color is your suit?
This suit is gray.
Gray. I would call it blue, okay?
It's gray.
All right, it's blue-gray, but it's certainly not black, right? All right. Let's say it's gray, but it's not...
It is gray.
Okay, so a not joke is, I would say, that suit is black. Not.
This suit is not black.
No, not has to be the end.
Okay.
Okay.
This suit is black nut.
This suit is black. Pause. You know what a pause is?
Yes.
This suit is black. Not.
This suit is black. Pause. Not.
No, you don't say pause. This suit is black. That's a pause. Not.
This suit is black.
Okay. I'm not quite...
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio goes with life. A salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
I think that there is oftentimes the impulse to suggest that if the two parties are disagreeing, then they're equally at fault and the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And an equivalence is presented, which reinforces, I think, people's cynicism about Washington generally.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, April the 5th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez.
Hey, what movie is that from that could be displayed?
That's from the movie of life, sir.
I saw that one. It sucks. It's got a crappy ending.
Yeah, but it's really nice to hear the president actually say something like that. Because, I mean, we've been talking about that for years, it seems like.
It wouldn't have been nice to hear him actually say that, too. To say, sometimes a false equivalence is presented, or an equivalence is presented, and, well, quite frankly, that's crap.
Yeah. That's right. Just say, you know what? BS. BS on that.
Screw you and your equivalence.
Horse crap. That's what it is. By the way, the show is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. I think you know that. www.bubblegenius.com. Best soap in the world.
I want one of those Titanic soaps. What they should have done is just make a soap in the shape of the Titanic and have it sink.
That's like right.
Soap that doesn't float.
Yeah. And you make little soapy people falling off and hitting those big propellers.
Drowning.
Yeah.
Great. I totally buy that.
I'd love that. That'd be fun. So you could sit in the bathtub and just play Titanic in the bathtub.
Or a soap of James Cameron that you can drown yourself.
Oh, my God. You know, I was going to leave this to the after party, but I should just mention, there's a pub, like a microbrew pub and Mexican restaurant near here. And they serve a variety of microbrewed beers. One of them is called, and this is my favorite beer there, Dark Sabbath.
Excellent.
And last night we went to this place
for copyright purposes.
Yeah, in Dark Sabbath instead of Black Sabbath, right? So we went to this place, and I had, and they, oh, by the way, and they served the Dark Sabbath in the sort of the Belgian style with the, almost like a wine glass. And so I had two of these, and I notice up on the chalkboard above the bar, it says that
they have the alcohol content.
They have the alcohol content. Well, they said it was about 10% alcohol by volume. No,
yeah.
No, much, much, much more.
I don't think, do they make beer that has more than maybe 10%? I mean, I usually drink an incredible freaking beer called La Fin du Monde.
Yeah.
The End of the World, which is kind of apropos. And it's got, I think it's like 9.5 or something. It's great.
Well, this one, the Dark Sabbath, it's a dark beer. It's like almost like a Guinness. And it tastes much better than a Guinness, though. And I love Guinness. This is much better than Guinness. And, God, I mean, I got just from just two glasses of this Dark Sabbath beer, I was just hammered. And then this morning, and leading up to the show here, I just had like the worst, like almost semi hangover. After two of these beers,
yeah.
I swear to God,
one this morning too.
I almost feel like doing like a Seinfeld test where I clandestinely steal some and bring it to a lab and find out if there's really just 10% alcohol by volume, because it I swear to God had to have been a lot more.
You're going
to
shut down the frozen yogurt place?
Yeah, that's right. Fat.
Yeah, I went, Taryn and I went to a bar called Harvard and Stone last night. It's like hipster haven, but a great place. Mm-hmm. And they make a drink there called Baby's First Bourbon.
Yeah.
And I think we went through like six of those each.
Oh, my God. Six of those. And so, and you woke up this morning with no fuzzy taste.
Oh, no, I woke up this morning with a hell of a headache.
Okay,
I mean, trust me, we've done that before, and I've been okay, but for whatever reason this morning, I was feeling that crap.
I'm glad I'm not the only one then. I mean, and I rarely get hangovers. You know what gives me hangovers is cheap vodka and evidently this beer that has like 30% alcohol by volume or something, where like a wine glass of it will just get you hammered. And right. And that's the way I feel today. So I'm a little slow on the uptake. I hope that's okay.
Please, I'm always.
No to the affiliates down the line. Bob is slow on the uptake. By the way, if you want to explore, find out what restaurant it was, it's called the Big Island Brew House. It's in Waimea. It's really good. Really good place. I love I always get there. They got. It's like one of the only really good Mexican restaurants on this island. And so we're always there, and they've got lethal micro.
I live in LA.
Micro-brews.
There's nothing but Mexican food. Restaurant is technically Mexican food.
Well, see, I could just eat that. I just eat Mexican food. I could eat Mexican food three meals a day.
Everything you eat here, whenever you go to a restaurant, is prepared by Mexicans.
Well, and they're the best chefs.
They are, actually. Anthony Bourdain used to talk about that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you go to any gourmet restaurant in
Central American, South American, absolutely.
Yeah, like anything that has two, three Michelin stars, they're staffed by Mexican chefs in the back.
Yep,
unbelievable. I don't know what it is exactly, but I guess it comes from the fact that Mexican food is easily the best food in the world.
It is pretty good. Taryn and I went to Scarpetta last week. Yeah. Scott Conant's place.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Conant he's one of the judges on Chopped. I know we're getting off subject here, but
yeah, we really are.
Yeah, unbelievable. David Spade was sitting like two banquettes down from us.
Oh, really? Yeah. David Spade?
Yeah, yeah. And some, the hot blonde of the week. The food was great.
Was David Spade doing anything repulsive and annoying?
No, not at all. He's just, I guess I could say he was just being David Spade, but I suppose that is repulsive and annoying to some. But, he's just sitting having dinner.
So, repulsive and annoying. That's a good way to segue to Keith Olbermann. Being no, he's not repulsive. I don't think he's repulsive and annoying.
He absolutely is repulsive and annoying. And you know what? It dawned on me that the stuff that I've written about him lately on Deus Ex Malcontent has been so negative. And I'm always reminded that when I first started the site, one of the very first things I wrote about Olbermann was about how great he was, about how everyone knows he's crazy, everyone knows he's a pain in the ass, but you know, when the little red light on the camera goes on, he's so brilliant that he makes it worthwhile. And you know, a mere, what, 5.5 years later, you know, after losing 2 more jobs, it's just, it's undeniable now. No, he's not worth it. I don't give a crap how brilliant he is.
Yeah.
He is. The man cannot get along with anyone. And he's right when he says that there are a lot of idiots in TV news. And, you know, that chances are, if you work in TV news, you can make the claim that you're working with or for idiots. That's not, you know, that's not news. That's not a big deal. But he doesn't get along with anyone. And everyone who has ever worked with him or is tangentially aware of his behavior, you know, in the office, on and off the air, whatever. Anyone who is aware of that knows that Keith comes with all of these DSM-4 level psychological tics and psychoses and neuroses and hang-ups. You know, all this crap that he brings to the table with him that you have to put up with, that when you hire him, you are signing on to deal with. The fact that he refuses to drive because he says he has some sort of inner ear issue and he can't drive. That's one of them. The fact that, you know, there are stories about him getting underneath his desk and freaking the hell out. I mean, these are all very real things. I mean, he really is that crazy, that bitter, that nuts.
Yeah.
And it just, when you hire him, you bring so much unnecessary drama into your newsroom,
yeah,
into your workplace. And it just, I mean, after watching him get canned twice now, he has good arguments for you know, good rationale on occasion for the issues that he has with the places he works. But nobody, it's not always someone else's fault. And he is constantly blaming other people. You know, somebody posted a really great comment on my blog the other day when I wrote really quickly about him getting, you know, breaking off from Current. And they said, you know, perfectly, exactly the same thing I thought. Like, when you heard Keith say, you know, I screwed up, when, you know, that was the big grab you headline at Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And
from Letter.
When you heard that, the very first thing, you know, your mind wanted to go to was, wow, he's actually admitting that he made a mistake. And then as soon as you read it, I screwed up in thinking that I could make it work, that the Current TV could satisfy me, and that they were ready to have someone as brilliant as myself. And, you know, I screwed up in underestimating how brilliant I am. And it's like, dude, just shut up.
Yeah.
Seriously, you're not freaking worth it.
I mean, here, I'm kind of on the fence between being angry and disappointed.
I'm both.
And because I'm angry because there are so few liberal voices on cable news.
I was just going to say, exactly. He is such a good quality and important voice.
That's right. And he spent so many years in which he was right at the centerpiece of that. I mean, he was really the anchor of all liberal thinking on cable news at a very important time in our history. And then something happened. Something happened where I don't know what, and I don't even want to speculate because God only knows what occurred. But, you know, he started doing special comments every night or every other night. I forget what it was. And the special comment and the news portions of his show began to merge into just self-indulgence. And then the Fridays with Thurber. Oh, my God. You want to talk about a segment that I found utterly insufferable. And I'm just, you know, I don't know what exactly has gone on behind the scenes other than what he has admitted to. Because I don't, you know, we could speculate all day long about his psychoses. And certainly there are lots of those rumors. But
his neuroses, by the way, honestly, I'm not kidding. That's not speculation.
Yeah, well, it's narcissism.
That is proven fact. When I got to KCBS back in the 90s, he had been there recently before leaving for, I think, ESPN at the time. And everyone there who worked with him, they all had stories.
Yeah.
They all had the stories about how Keith, I mean, just the absolute insane things that Keith would do.
Well, he's got narcissistic personality disorder.
He absolutely does. He is a narcissist.
And I mean, it's worse than being a narcissist. I mean, we all have egos and we could all be, you know, termed, you know, a small N narcissist in some ways at some times. But this guy's got the full-fledged thing. from what I can tell. I mean, if I was really forced to speculate, which, you know, I'll just go out on a limb and say, yeah, I think he's got narcissistic personality disorder. And I think that creates a very, very bad work environment for everyone around, because everyone's dancing around that person. And people,
that's exactly, everyone's walking on eggs, and you bring in someone like Olbermann, and you basically, you bring a toxic cloud into your workplace.
You
are asking everyone else to have to put up with it.
I mean, I've worked with so many people who have NPD, and it's just, it's impossible to deal with. It is impossible. It's manipulative. You feel off balance. And it's just, you don't want to be in the same room with that person. Now, he may not have it. I don't know. But, you know, based on what he was doing on his show, he just seemed to lapse into this darker and darker chasm of self-indulgence. And then leaving MSNBC, you know, he goes to Current, where I think he thought he was going to rebuild the network. He was going to sort of be what Dave did for CBS. He was going to do for Current. And I don't know if he was capable of really doing that, because I think, you know, Letterman has his own problems off the air, but I think he knows where to be when to be a nice guy when it's needed and required of his job. And so I think there was a big difference there in terms of how that could be pulled off.
Something that interests me is that he mentioned, he seemed to mention sort of the change of management at Current. And I have to assume, I could be wrong, but I have to assume that he's referring to them bringing in Dave Borman to basically head the network. You know?
Yeah, and in the meantime, try to get a lasso.
And Borman is, you know, Borman is ex-CNN.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've written about him before. I actually think Borman's a good guy and certainly a very talented news person. I kind of gave him crap when I wrote about him, but, you know, that's just me. But I mean, he's a very strong personality, though. And I mean, he's not someone who sort of suffers fools lightly, and he's not someone who's going to be pushed around no matter what title they gave Olbermann. And I think that Olbermann sort of had it in his mind that, you know, yeah, like you said, he wanted to sort of remake the network in his image. And, well, quite frankly, he has to work with other people. And that's the thing. That's the thing about Keith. It's exactly what I said. He can't work with anyone. He cannot. If you are not allowing him to do every single thing he wants to do at any given moment, he pitches he throws a tantrum like he's a freaking, you know, 8-year-old.
It's such a shame. It's such a shame. And you know what? You can kind of compare this to. You know, we got to take a break in a second. But when we come back, I want to talk about compare and contrast Olbermann with Howard Stern and Chevy Chase, because I think there's some valid comparisons here to kind of paint a picture as to what the hell happened over there and why this guy is, you know, kind of putting himself in a position where he's basically being run off again. Quick break, back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
All right. Oh, this is, I just kind of mesmerized by this song a second. I forgot that I actually chose it to play
the one and only, the one and only record from these guys. Although, yeah. What's his name went on to produce a lot.
So, you know, you can make the comparison between Keith Olbermann and Howard Stern. Howard left terrestrial radio and went to satellite radio, went to Sirius satellite radio. Very small, but they spent a lot of money. And they basically gave him what he needed to do the show. It wasn't a perfect environment. I mean, Sirius was hurting constantly in money trouble. They're stock price tanked. You know, he did talk on the air a lot about how the stock options that they were offered were basically worthless, because the, you know, it was just a similar situation where you had a big A-list personality going to a small startup media company.
Right. And Sirius, you know, SiriusXM made every single thing they did about Stern. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you ever listen to Opie and Anthony, they talk about how Stern runs the network. I mean, he just does. I mean, he has his own entrance. He never has to see. I've been on, you know, I've been a guest on SiriusXM before at their studios in New York. And it's, you know, everything is the big Stern fist and all that. But oddly enough, you never see Stern. Like, Stern comes up like his own elevator or something, you know, where they beam him up from the street level. You know, I mean, he's very sort of he's very much his own entity there. But he's omnipresent.
Yeah. Well, and also the ratings, though, just like moving to current, a small fraction of what he had with terrestrial radio. Likewise, Olbermann, ratings a tiny fraction of what he had when he was at MSNBC. Now, that's to be expected, though. I mean, you know, Current is a digital-only cable network. It's not included in basic cable. There are people all around the country who would otherwise be watching Olbermann who can't because it's not on their cable provider. It's not in their cable package. So you have, you know, you have a big decline in the number of viewers. But what's the difference? What is the difference here? Stern, who is notoriously kind of a nice guy off the air. I mean, he's a ruthless negotiator when it comes to contract time and things like that. But he's always nice to, at least recently, to the people who he deals with off the air. It wasn't like
he
that.
And he also considers himself to be sort of a company man. Like, even though we all know that when he gets really angry, he'll start, you know, he'll talk a lot of smack. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, he's, look, you hired me, you've given me a certain amount of creative freedom, and therefore I give you the support that you need.
Well, it's just that he makes it a point of personal pride to bring with him significant ratings and promotion and, I mean, he doesn't want to walk away a failure, and I think there's a lesson there for Olbermann. And I don't know where the guy's going to end up. I honestly don't know who is going to hire him next. I thought maybe initially, before I was really hearing about all of the behind the scenes things that were happening at Current, I thought maybe CNN will pick him up and put him in place of Piers Morgan, who's terrible. But I don't know. I mean, really, I don't. If I was the head of one of these cable news networks or just Network X, and I was given the opportunity to hire Olbermann, I don't think I could do it because I don't know if the ratings bump would be worth the off-air hassle, the potential for lawsuits. I mean, now the news came down today that the lawsuit is officially on. Yeah. Keith Olbermann is suing Current TV.
Right, which is just ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. No really big entity is going to give you absolute creative freedom. Yeah. They're just not. They're not going to give you every single thing you want. That's the way bureaucracy works. We all know it. Mm-hmm. And yet, Olbermann wants to have the best of everything. He wants to be on a big network with a lot of reach and a lot of money and resources, and he wants to be given complete freedom to do whatever he wants by that network, to have his every single whim on air and off entertained and indulged. And he's not going to get it. I mean, you know, Louis C.K. gets complete creative freedom from a cable network. You know, he couldn't go, even though it's, you know, it's FX, it's Fox, it's still cable. He couldn't go to NBC or ABC or CBS, you know, prime time, and expect to be given complete creative freedom. Here's your $1 million a week or whatever the hell it is. I think it's $800,000. I think he said, go make your show and, you know, we'll see it when it airs. It would never happen. Yeah. Never. And yet Olbermann wants that. He wants to have every single whim of his indulged. And that's just, it's not going to happen. It's just not. And, you know, instead of behaving like an adult, he acts like a freaking, you know, pissed off 4-year old at that very, you know, serious reality.
To me, I go back to what I was saying before, just so disappointed because, you know, you want someone like that to, and you can see the potential in Keith Olbermann, and you can see what he's capable of doing. And we've seen it many times in the past, and it's the same way with all of these celebrities and rock stars and everyone who kind of self-destructs. You want to go up to them and grab them by the lapels and say, stop it. Do you see what you're doing? Do you see the potential that you're wasting here?
The problem, what happens, what breaks you of that cycle is when it finally doesn't pay off, and you don't have anything to fall back on, and there is no outlet for you. That can, like, you know, if Olbermann were to win $70 million or whatever the hell, and certainly if he were to win it and somebody else hires him, then he's learned nothing at all. I mean, and I, by the way, I say this from personal experience as somebody who's made a lot of big ass mistakes that were my fault, and at the time, you know, it's, some haven't been my fault, but at the time I blamed, you know, years ago, you know, throughout a good portion of my life, I would blame on somebody else. I'd find a way to sort of weasel my way out of taking responsibility for it. And it took really, really, really screwing up, but it also took kind of being screwed over a little bit too, sort of seeing like sort of the other side and realizing what I don't want to behave like. And then taking a step back and not doing what I had normally done for so very, very long. It took that for me to finally at least change, I think a little, and I'm not patting myself on the back for it. It just, I am happy with the fact that I think it finally happened for me. I think I finally sort of broke out of what was a really nasty pattern in my life.
Yeah. Well, I think you are probably more psychologically healthy than Keith Olbermann. And
you know, I don't think at one point I probably wasn't, but I think I'm a little bit better now, and I think that one of the reasons why is because I did take a couple of steps back, and I did some very, very serious self-analysis.
Well, and that's just
and
the thing.
Very serious soul-searching.
And that's why I said what I said, because you reached a point, fortunately, at a younger age than Olbermann has, and Olbermann hasn't done it. He hasn't reached this point at all, where you stopped yourself and said, look, I don't know if that's the case, but in the case of Olbermann, I've become a cartoon character. I've become self-parody. I need to stop. I need to make some changes in how I proceed with my career, because I'm really my priorities are all effed up, and I need to do something different.
He hasn't learned crap, and he doesn't have a reason to, because he's still – nothing has really happened. Okay, so we lost a job at a place. He always gets hired again. He always lands, quote unquote, lands on his feet. Yeah. He still has a hell of a lot of money. You know, he knows full well that somebody somewhere will probably give him another chance. And it's not until you really do screw up and you really do lose stuff and, you know, you realize that there are consequences to your actions and there's a huge price to be paid, that's when you kind of start to come around a little bit. And, you know, this is stuff, you know, my personal stuff is stuff for the after party, but it took a lot for me, I think, to finally get to that point where I'm like, all right, look, not only have I lost stuff through things that were my fault, I lost stuff through things that weren't my fault. And I kind of got to that, you know, Tyler Durden moment where, you know, it's only after you've lost everything that you're free to do anything.
Yeah.
But I finally, after kind of taking a couple steps back, I sort of learned a lesson a little bit, and it would do Olbermann very, very well to proceed with a certain amount of quiet, and thoughtful, and detached analysis from the way he's been for a long time and what he's been doing. And I'm not freaking Dr. Drew here, but and the only reason I'm saying it is because I would say I don't give a crap what Olbermann does, you know. Let him, you know, waste his life being an idiot. I could care less. But you're right. I do think he has a lot to sort of give. He has, you know, he has a lot of very important things to say and a good role to play in, you know, in the political discourse. And he's just wasting it because he's a jackass.
We got to take one more break, and we'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yes, it is. And we're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. We're going to talk about, I got a couple more things about Olbermann when we get back from this break. But we're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com, the best damn soap in the world. And they've got Titanic soap. And here's the Bubble Genius ladies to tell us about their Titanic soap.
On the March, brought to you by Bubble Genius. 100 years ago, in the icy waters of the North Atlantic, one of history's most captivating catastrophes, The sinking of the unsinkable RMS Titanic. Yes, 100 years later, its tragic story still captures hearts and minds everywhere.
And now you can have your own piece of history right in your own bathtub with The Band Bathed On, Sudsy Bath Bar from Bubble Genius. This clever creation is crafted from genuine vegetable glycerin soap and features a three-dimensional rendering of the sinking majesty, complete with swirling icy waters and frosty icebergs. Not to mention a historically accurate rendition of the very icy culprit that tore into the Titanic and sent it to the freezing depths below, while women and children fled and the band bathed on. Go down with the Titanic in your tub with The Band Bathed On, only from Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com!
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BobAndChez, and get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. And while you're at it, please sign up for the podcast on iTunes. It's free. I mean, if you go to iTunes, it's not like the after party. This one's free. If you go to iTunes and subscribe, you'll get all the shows as they're posted, downloaded directly to your iTunes application, and then onto your phone, and then onto your iPod or your iPad, and then you can shove us right into your pants.
By the way, say Titanic again.
I was saying Titanic.
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 Who the hell says that?
started saying it now.
You're like a Brit. You say like Pentagon.
Pentagon. Yes. I don't know why. I just felt stupid, and I was saying, yes, it's the movie Titanic. The sinking of the Titanic.
That's like the porn parody, the XXX film, Titanic.
Right. Right. I don't know. It's like to say Titanic. I wanted to say, too, about Keith Olbermann. What this has done also, and this is another reason why it pisses me off. When he left MSNBC, and when he was suspended that time prior to that, and some of the battles that we had been reading about in the press that he was having with Phil Griffin and all of that. He was saying, oh, why are you beating up on Keith? What's going on? You know, and I kind of feel like an idiot for defending him. Knowing and kind of being duped into thinking, well, yeah, it's the suits at MSNBC are just constantly screwing with Keith. What are they doing? Why are they messing with his show? You know, and then realize, you know, it's not Phil. It's not MS. It's just wherever he goes. This is the way things play out.
That's what I mean. You know, 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. He's the common denominator in all of it.
So disappointing. So disappointing. But, you know, I'm glad to see that there's going to be this new Aaron Sorkin show on HBO.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it. It looks great, other Sorkin show.
It looks amazing. It's called The Newsroom. And Jeff Daniels plays almost like a Keith Olbermann kind of guy. And I'm not sure. I don't know if Keith at one point was a registered Republican. I think he was. And I think this might be based on that. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But this character Jeff Daniels plays is a registered Republican news anchor, did a straight news show. In the trailer, they kind of refer to him as the Jay Leno of news anchors, where he doesn't step on anyone's feet. And then suddenly at this Q&A at a college, he loses his spadoinkle. And I think I have the clip here. Yeah, here it is. This is a wonderful bit of audio and just classic Sorkin writing.
My name's Steven. I'm a junior, and my question's for Will McAvoy.
As a news anchor, you've almost religiously avoided stating a political allegiance. The Jay Leno of news anchors. You're popular because you don't bother anyone. How do you feel about that? Are you willing to say whether you lean right or left?
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question. I want a human moment from you. Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer. You, sorority girl. Just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. We're 7th in literacy, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the f*** you're talking about. Yosemite?
So, there you go. You know what I'm kind of tired of, though? I mean,
every one of his shows has the, like, losing it moment. Studio 60 and the Sunset Strip basically started with the Howard Beale, the Judd Hirsch, Howard Beale moment.
Yeah, but, you know, I kind of like that. I like the rapid fire rattling off of stats. And, you know, Jed Bartlett on The West Wing used to do that all the time. I mean, most of the characters on The West Wing used to do that. And I really like that onslaught of fact. It's like a tsunami of facts. And Aaron Sorkin's really great at writing that and incorporating that into his scripts. It's even
that
in
should
his,
be our tagline on this show.
tsunami of facts. From now on, I'm going to have Buzz do the liner. A tsunami of facts.
A tsunami of facts, genius. By the way, is tsunami of facts is what sunk the Titanic.
It sunk the Titanic. Right. I'll have to get him to do that for the top of the show.
Excellent.
But it was also kind of like the writing in The Social Network was also like that, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, it's excellent. You kidding?
Where Zuckerberg is making his case, you know, with just that.
To Rooney Mara.
Mm-hmm. Just an onslaught. A tsunami of facts, as it were.
Exactly.
So I'm really looking forward to that show. And I was saying, Daniels is a Republican, and later on in the trailer, he says that just because he's Republican doesn't mean he thinks that hurricanes are caused by not praying enough.
So in other words, he's the kind of Republican that doesn't really exist. He's basically the Republicans.
Right.
The Republicans will say he's a liberal version of what a Republican should be.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a liberal. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Liberal.
But I think it's clever. I think for a brief moment in time, it'll throw off Republicans a little bit.
Alan Alda was a Republican on The West Wing, but he wasn't really a Republican.
That's not right. By
today's standards, because he was thoughtful and smart and, wasn't craven and didn't pander to, you know, the lowest common denominator, absolute stupidity in this country. Yeah. So therefore, you know. He wasn't representative of any kind of Republican that anyone knows these days.
And John McCain was like that in Game Change. Of course, we know what John McCain is really like. But in Game Change, he was the non-Republican Republican, the idealized Republican. One last quick break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Heartless Bastards Down in the Canyon. I love this song.
Yeah, I know you seem to like them.
Yeah, I do. I posted one of their songs this week. Really love this song. It's really kind of a throwback track. It's like ripped from like 1976 or something. But lots of things to talk about other than stupid media navel-gazing. Mitt Romney is, and I've been saying this for a while, that he's the presumptive nominee. Well, he's kind of now the presumptive nominee for real. He won those three primaries on Tuesday, won, what was it, Wisconsin, D.C., and Maryland. So it's just kind of a strange lineup of primaries there. He's expected to win Pennsylvania, and that's going to be it for Santorum. So what you're going to see now, and we'll only talk about, get into this briefly, is Santorum either dropping out of the race or Santorum really, really softening his language about Romney, knowing that the next step will be Mitt Romney offering the vice presidential slot to Rick Santorum.
Wow.
I mean, honest to God, he's got to do it. I don't see there being any other. I mean, he's got, like John McCain, he's got to pick a wingnut. He's got to pick a wingnut for vice president. Otherwise, there's going to be.
I'm not sure John McCain knew that he was picking a wingnut, though.
John McCain, I think, knew that he was picking a conservative. I think he knew that he was picking a woman. I don't think he knew to the extent of how crazy and idiotic Sarah Palin was.
Oh, no. He had absolutely no idea.
But I think knowing those mistakes that John McCain made in not vetting Sarah Palin and just picking absolutely the most dangerous vice presidential pick anyone could choose, I don't think Mitt Romney's going to make that same mistake. I think, but he will pick someone who is going to at least stir up a little bit of enthusiasm in the Tea Party wing of the conservative movement. I think they need that. I don't know if they're going to. There's some speculation here the last couple of days that it could be Paul Ryan. I mean, he's been on Glenn Beck talking about progressivism as a cancer. So he's got the red meat tendency in him.
I don't think that he's going to pick Santorum. I don't. Because I think that while Romney is a panderer of the highest order, he's also relatively smart. You know, I mean, he's not a stupid guy. He's a bright guy. And I don't think he would want the sort of constant threat of Santorum as a vice president, which is someone who would sort of go head to head with him, I think, on a lot. I think it'd be a little bit contentious. I could be completely wrong about that. And I also think that having Santorum on the ticket would do great things for, you know, the idiot base, but it would turn off a lot of independents, and Romney still has to score big with the independents. I think Ryan is a better choice in that he's far right enough to make the base happy, but he also comes off as benign enough to possibly dupe some independent voters understand the kind of crap he's peddling.
I think you might be right. I just don't know that. I think the difference between Paul Ryan and Rick Santorum is Rick Santorum is more of that kind of fire and brimstone, I want to ban contraception kind of.
He's a culture warrior.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, he's the typical culture warrior wedge issue Republican. You know, the kind that has basically taken. He's a Tea Partier. You know, he's taken over the kind of person who's taken over the party. But I think Ryan has just as much sort of red, not red meat, but sort of red state clout, if there's a difference. You know, he's not a sort of wedge issue. You know, I saw an 800-foot, 900-foot Jesus in Tulsa, Oklahoma kind of guy. But he's, at the same time, he appeals to the base enough while also, as I said, sort of seeming, if you don't pay attention to what he's saying, seeming benign enough, you know, and enough like a smart, you know, relatively intelligent, likable doof to be able to not, you know, not shake independent voters' sensibilities too much.
It kind of makes sense because he does ride that fence between being a fire and brimstone wingnut and being kind of one of these, you know, the Republicans like to regard him as one of the serious smart guys in the party.
Right. But, you know, he could also very easily, the most important thing I think for Romney will be to go with someone Southern. And I mean, first of all, I despise the fact that we're even pontificating on this. You know, everybody does it. Every half-assed armchair pundit and every very highly paid pundit plays this freaking game every time, you know, the VP stakes comes up. And none of us, nobody could have predicted Sarah Palin. And, you know, and that's the kind of crap that whenever you start making assumptions on this kind of thing, you generally fall flat on your face. But I do kind of think logic at least dictates to me that he's going to need someone from the South, whether it be, you know, I don't know who's a good choice.
Haley Barbour.
Haley Barbour. Bob, what's his name? McDonald.
Marco Rubio, Rick Perry. I mean, any of those guys could end up. Bobby Jindal, for God's sake. Any of those guys?
Dear God, no.
Yeah, or Nikki Haley. I mean, any of those people could be on a short list for vice president. I don't know who it's going to be yet. So who knows? Who knows? I think if I were to predict right now, like I said, either Santorum or Paul Ryan.
I don't know. You know, Bob McDonald really doesn't seem like, now that my brain fart's over with, Bob McDonald really doesn't seem like a terrible pick. And I know that there are a couple of people who have mentioned him. You know, he's got a certain amount of, you know, he's got a certain amount of sort of Southern clout, but he comes off as being not crazy, which I guess is important.
Well, I think they need him in Richmond. Because Virginia is such a swing state, they need the Republicans need to control the governorship in Virginia, because they've got lots of crazy legislation that they need to rinse through the process. And, it's very likely that if Bob McDonnell leaves to go try to be vice president, that he could, because Virginia is a very divided state, it's a very purple state, that they could end up electing a Democrat as governor, and then that's it. That's it. Everything that goes through the state house gets stopped right there. And they've got a lot of crazy.
He should pick L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. He's really good when it comes to, fixing potholes. Not, by the way.
Nah.
Boy. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So, Reince Priebus said today that...
the unfortunately named Reince Priebus.
Yes, Cantina alien Reince Priebus. it said today that the Republican war on women, the Republican war against women, is purely fiction.
Sure it is.
Yeah. He doesn't believe that there's, he's the chairman of the RNC. So, of course, he's not going to say, oh, yes, we're totally declaring war against women. He said, well, for one thing, if the Democrats said we had a war on caterpillars and every mainstream media outlet talked about the fact that the Republicans have a war on caterpillars, then we have a problem with caterpillars. He likes the word caterpillars.
So please, please tell me, I haven't looked today because I've been, I'm still entrenched and moving. Please tell me that war on caterpillars is now a trending topic, a trending hashtag on Twitter.
I haven't seen Twitter in the last hour or so, but I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. He said that the fact of the matter is it's a fiction, meaning the war on women is fiction. And I was looking this up. I wanted to put together sort of a comprehensive list and of things that recently that have happened that kind of verify and vindicate the idea of a Republican war against women. And I thought, well, OK, I'll come up with 20 things and I'll rattle them all off. There are more things. I cannot even believe the length of this list that I'm looking at in front of me. It's so long that I can't even read it. And we got about 10 minutes left in the show. There's just no way I can do it. So, just to summarize, this is from politicsusa.com. A recent report from the Guttmacher Institute details the extent of 2011's war on women's reproductive rights. This is just from 2011. Right, this is just a summary of last year. By almost any measure, issues related to reproductive health and rights at the state level received unprecedented attention in 2011. In the 50 states combined, legislators introduced more than 1,100 reproductive health right and rights related provisions, a sharp increase from 950 introduced in 2010. By year's end, 135 of these provisions, 135 out of 1,100, had been enacted in 36 states, an increase from the 89 enacted in 2010 and the 77 enacted in 2009. Fully 68% of these new provisions, 92 in 24 states, restrict access to abortion services, a striking increase from last year when 26%, that'd be 2010, when 26% of new provisions restricted abortion. The 92 new abortion restrictions enacted in 2011 shattered the previous record of 34 adopted in 2005. Abortion restrictions took many forms. Bans in 6 states, waiting periods in 3 states, ultrasound laws in 5 states, insurance coverage, 3 states joining the existing 5 with such restrictions, clinic regulations, 4 states, medication abortion, 7 states. The list of abortion laws goes on and on. I won't even read all of them. Maybe I'll add this as an addendum to the show post today.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's so long. Skipping down past all of the various abortion laws that have been introduced on a statewide level. Anti-abortion laws, I should say. Legalizing the murder of abortion doctors. South Dakota flirted with a law to make the murder of an abortion doctor legal as self-defense. When South Dakota was forced to drop the idea of murdering abortion doctors, Nebraska and Iowa picked up the idea. Abstinence education. A total of 37 states mandate abstinence education while contraception falls increasingly under attack by Republican legislatures. War on birth control and contraception. The Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives is attacking the DHS Department of Health and Human Services new guidelines that require insurance companies to cover contraceptive services free of charge. Committee Chairman Representative Joe Pitts, Republican, Pennsylvania, claims the new rules do not protect religious groups who object to contraception. We know this story. Republicans are going nuts about the new rules under the Affordable Care Act. Personhood laws and fetal rights and mandatory ultrasounds. Florida, Montana, Ohio will have personhood on the ballot in 2012. And according to CNN, efforts in at least five other states are in the planning stages. Mississippi has just rejected one such extremist measure, and Colorado and South Dakota have also rejected them. In 2012, mandatory ultrasounds have become the rage. Republican legislators seem to be realizing that voters aren't exactly jumping on the bandwagon. Well, that's good news.
Are you auditioning for a new Sorkin show?
This would be one of those moments, except it's even too long. It's even too long for a Sorkin monologue. It really, really is.
Wow, imagine that.
I mean, here are attacks on abortion clinics. Now, this is the hot version of the war. This is the shooting war that's happening. Attacks on abortion clinics since 2000. May 28th, 2000. An arson at a clinic in Concord, New Hampshire. September 30th, 2000, John Earl, a Catholic priest, drove his car into the North Illinois Health Clinic after learning that the FDA had approved the drug RU486. June 11th, 2001, an unsolved bombing at a clinic in Tacoma, Washington, destroyed a wall, resulting in $6,000 in damages. July 4th, 2005, a clinic in Palm Beach, Florida, was the target of an arson. December 12, 2005, Patricia Hughes and Jeremy Donahue threw a Molotov cocktail at a clinic in Shreveport, Louisiana. September 13, 2006, John McMenemy of Rochester Hills, Michigan, crashed his car into Edgerton Women's Healthcare Center in Davenport, Iowa. April 25, 2007, a package left at a women's health clinic in Austin, Texas, contained an explosive device capable of inflicting serious injury or death. May 9, 2007, an unidentified person deliberately set fire to a Planned Parenthood clinic in Virginia Beach, Virginia. December 6, 2007, Chad Altman and Sergio Baca were arrested for the arson of Dr. Curtis Boyd's clinic in Albuquerque. January 22, 2009, Matthew L. DeRosia, 32, who was reported to have had a history of mental illness, rammed an SUV into the front entrance of a Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota. January 1, 2012. That's this year. Bobby Joe Rogers, 41, firebombed the American Family Planning Clinic in Pensacola, Florida, with a Molotov cocktail. The fire gutted the building. April 1st, 2012, a bomb exploded on the windowsill of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Grand Chute, Wisconsin, resulting in a fire that damaged one of the clinic's examination rooms. No injuries were reported. Doesn't matter, because it's terrorism. That's the whole idea of this. Scare the bejesus out of anyone who would dare walk into them. That's staff and patients alike. You could talk about George Tiller was shot and hit in 1993, was shot and killed in 2009. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's a fiction. BS, Rance Priebus. Rejected, right. Star Wars Cantina alien. It's a fiction. They're not reasonable. They're not, you know, Republicans who believe that hurricanes are caused by high pressure systems, yada, yada, yada. They're Pat Robertson, Rick Santorum types. Fire and brimstone, red meat.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what the modern Republican is. And that's why I've, you know, you and I have talked about this recently, and I wrote about it, you know, Jonathan Chait wrote about it brilliantly, that rather than sort of changing with the times, that brand of Republican is just holding on for dear life and eventually is going to be demographically pushed to extinction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know,
which is, of course, a great thing.
And I don't know exactly what to do about that other than to say, you know, when you read something by David Frum, you don't have to agree with it. In fact, feel free to disagree with it, but just appreciate the fact that some Republican somewhere who has a name is making an effort to be reasonable. That's right. I was reading on Balloon Juice yesterday. You know, John Cole, who runs Balloon Juice, used to be a Republican. I mean, you know, I know so many guys and women who were once Republicans and are now Democrats, liberal Democrats. Me included. When I was in high school, I was a serious Republican. Started a Young Republicans Club, for God's sake. And then, you know, I began to realize the sort of ridiculous positions that were involved in being a conservative, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I just said, this is absurd. You know, with John Cole, it was Graham Frost and some of the ridiculousness that happened during Bush's second term. I forget what the other thing was. But he just began to see all of the absurdity happening on the right and just decided, you know, Charles Johnson from Little Green Footballs is the same. He also kind of defected from the conservative ranks. And I think that John Cole made a good point, Chez, and it was in writing and reflecting about his transformation politically and ideologically. He said that he just wishes the Democrats would fight a little harder.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think if the Democrats would be a little more aggressive in defending their policies, and we're talking about policies that are, unlike the Republicans, grounded in reality, I think it would put that final nail in the coffin of what remains of the current modern-day Republican Party. Because the only thing keeping them alive is their ability to condense things onto bumper stickers. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe and listen to the After Party. Take care. We'll see you then, Jess.
See ya.